So we have a new videographer in our church, and we just unveiled that talent. So let's get up for Madison for editing that for us. I apologize to the first service people. They didn't get to see that. It'll be released this week on social media, so I look forward to future events. So now we can capture it and edit it a little bit better, a little higher quality. So exciting times. Before we get started today, I want to thank everyone for coming out this Memorial Day weekend. And today I've asked Pastor Lucas to come in just a moment. We had such a great time at our Uprising Men's Conference this year that we were going to go back into our regular series, Into the Wild, but we felt like there was a little bit more juice that we needed to squeeze out of all that happened last weekend. And Lucas specifically had some things that he talked to me about that he got out of his event, and some other things that we got out of the ringing the bell ceremony at the end. And so I said, let's draw this out today. Let's spend another week ruminating and marinating in God's goodness. And we've seen so many lives change. As a matter of fact, we had a men's outing at Fuzzy's Tacos this Wednesday, and be looking for a lot of men's outings this summer as we have opportunities for community. But one of them was, Tommy, how old's your dad? 71 years old. I'm talking to a 71-year-old guy, and he was at our Uprising conference, and you saw all the stuff, crazy stuff that we were doing, and I don't know, I think age is just a number, right, in your mind, and he was telling me, he's like, man, I had so much fun, and the last church that he came from, he said, next year, I'm inviting my buddies. So if a 71-year-old dude is inviting his friends to come to something like this, man, it doesn't matter, young or old, the bonding of the brotherhood is what matters. And so it was a great, great conference, and we're excited about what God did. And so Pastor Lucas is going to come at this time and share with us a word. So let's give it up for our student pastor. He and his wife serve tirelessly, leading on shepherding our student ministry, and right now they are on pace for a record-setting Fuse Camp this summer. So let's give it up, Pastor Lucas!
Hey, good morning, good morning. Thank you, Pastor Tim. The opportunity to speak on Sunday is always a privilege. This morning, again, we want to kind of recap some of what I kind of saw God do at our event in particular during retreat and during the Uprising Conference. And what we kind of want to cover, the basis is that misunderstandings can mess with the mission sometimes. So to make sure, we do this on Wednesday night sometimes, I want to make sure that we're on the same page. So I'm going to ask you to participate. So if you're willing to play a little game with me, I want you to sit down. Perfect. You're all going to play. I like participation. I'm going to ask three simple questions. If your answer is yes, you're going to stand up, okay? If you are agreeing to this, sit down. Okay, perfect. Still good. So first question. Stand up if you've ever been in a misunderstanding with someone. At this point in time, you should all stand up or you're a liar and it's a good thing you're in church, all right? Good, good. You can sit down, you can sit down. We'll go a little step further with it. Stand up if that misunderstanding messed up something important. Good, we're all still on the same page. You can sit down, sit down. We're going to get a little bit more personal with this. Stand up if it was your fault. Oh, there's a question in that one. Y'all give each other a hand. You can sit down. See, it's simple things. Simple things. You don't even know what you just did. You did a couple things. One, you just proved to me that you can help me preach this message this morning. So you're going to participate, right? Two, you helped me understand that we all know what a misunderstanding feels like. We've all experienced the mess, the chaos that can be caused by a misunderstanding. But on the other side, if we've experienced the mess and the chaos, I'm going to assume we've also experienced the beauty of what can happen when everybody plays their part and works together. You see, when we get ready for retreat, for our conference, everything has to have a purpose. And I learned this over the years. And so when we start getting ready for what we call the big event, which is the time that we're going to make every man that signs up hate us at some point in time. Every event has three things in common. One, the men are going to be given instructions. When they show up to the event, they're going to be given instructions on what they're supposed to do. Two, they're going to have to interpret those instructions. Some detailed, some vague for a purposeful reason, but they're going to have to interpret the instructions. And then the last thing is they're going to have to execute the instructions. We're going to let them know what needs to be done. They're going to have to figure out how to do it, and then they're going to have to do it. The success of every one of the events, no matter how different they are, is solely dependent on a lack of misunderstanding. If someone misunderstands, the mission will get messed with. And I can assure you, on our event, the mission was messed with quite a few times. People would get confused. And it was incredible to see how something so small, we would send the guys out in canoes to go get these combination lock numbers that they were going to have to try to sort through and figure out what the combination was to their lock. And we had two of every color at these three different locations. And we would have the whole red team, and you have like 30 guys that say, okay, you guys have to go get six combinations, red and orange. You got to figure out who's going where and who's going what color. There just has to be 12 of you go. Then they had to interpret. They had to figure it out, and they had to execute. And sure enough, one team always messed up. The second group that came through, they said, Luke, what's the secret? I said, communication. Communication is what's going to help you find victory in the event. We started thinking about this and processing this. And we all know that Jesus has us on a mission, right? There's a task that he sent us out to accomplish. He's called us to go love people and love him in such a way that the people around us will experience life change. He's given us instructions on how to do it, but it's our job to interpret those properly so that we can interact with his will the way he's called us. But what happens when we misunderstand? How does that mess with our mission he's called us on? This morning, we want to look at a familiar story in John chapter 4. If you've been in church for more than an hour, you've possibly heard of this story. It's the woman at the well, the Samaritan woman. It's a story that, to be honest, I try to avoid because I've preached it so many times. As we were getting ready for this morning, Pastor Tim was like, John chapter 4. I'm like, no. Right, no. I don't want to do that again. But I couldn't get away from it because there's so much goodness in that story. And as we started walking through it, we see nothing but misunderstandings in the story, particularly with the disciples. This morning, we're going to see how their misunderstandings messed with their mission. And we want to learn from those mistakes. And so we want to look at three things that we can apply into our life, three attitudes, if you will help us not mess with the mission, but move it forward, doing our job to accomplish the task God has called us to. So in John chapter 4, to kind of catch you up, Jesus and the disciples have been walking around town to town, village to village, performing miracles, preaching, teaching. You imagine they're tired, right? Walk from town to town, nowhere to stay. You're not riding a car. Uber and Lyft aren't around. Like, you're just tired. Not to mention emotionally tired because you're dealing with people. Can I get amen that people are exhausting sometimes? So they get to this town called Samaria on their way to Galilee. Jesus stops at a well to rest, and the disciples go into town. As Jesus is there alone, a woman approaches the well, and they have a conversation. Which, just a side note, this woman walks down as a normal day, has a conversation that changes her life. I always chuckle when people say, I don't know how to talk well. I can't tell people about the gospel. Can you have a conversation? Sometimes life change just needs a conversation. All Jesus does is say, may I have a drink of water? And the ball starts rolling. The conversation begins. Before you know it, he's told her all she's ever done. He knows about her failed marriages and her mistakes. He knows that the village has outcast her and shunned her. He knows the shame she carries. He tells her that he is the living water, that if she knew who he was, she would be asking him for a drink of this eternal water, something that would never leave her thirsty or dry again. He tells her of his love, of his Father's love, and why he's there, the purpose and who he is, that he is there to save and deliver. And then the disciples return. And I love this. This is where we want to kind of sit in the story this morning. Jesus has had the conversation. The woman has had her Jesus moment. The disciples return. And in John chapter 4, verse 31, it says, meanwhile, the disciples are urging him to eat. He said to them, I have food that you don't know about. I love the next verse. It says, the disciples start to kind of ask, did you give them food? We just went all the way into town. We got food. We came back. He already has food. Who gave him food? They're looking around for the empty boxes and containers. They're trying to figure out how this is possible. There's already a misunderstanding. They come back from what they think was their mission. And Jesus says, I'm good. I already have food. Food you don't know about. And their only thought is, who brought him food? Where did he get it from? What is he talking about? He goes on to say, my food is to do the will of him who sent me and to accomplish his work. My will, my food, what nourishes me, what fills me, is to do the will and the work of him who sent me. The disciples, I love it, just confused. Didn't understand the real mission. See, here's the thing. If we're going to go and push forward the mission of Jesus, that thing he has sent us on, the journey he's called us to, it starts with this. We have to start looking and living at life on another level. We have to start looking at and living life on another level. And this is what I mean. You got to understand, their intention of their mission was not wrong. They went to go get their leader some food. But their interpretation of it was mistaken. They come back saying, Jesus, we brought you food. No, I'm good. I already have some. And they're just baffled. They had to widen their vision. They had to open their eyes to see past what they knew. Jesus says, I have food you don't know about. My food is my work. It's to do the will of the one who sent me. See, we have to start looking and living on another level. The disciples were confused. Start looking around for pizza boxes, Taco Bell wrappers. They don't know if there's like a DoorDash receipt they need to expense. Like, they don't know. They're trying to figure out, well, where and how he got food to eat. You see, their mistake, their confusion, their misunderstanding is what ours usually is too. They always started with the physical. When Jesus gave the message, they always started with the physical. But what did Jesus start with? The spiritual. When we look at life on the lower level, the wrong level, we will always be restricted to what we see as the physical, not the spiritual. Jesus says, I'm not talking about food. I'm talking about my work. I'm talking about the people. I'm talking about doing what they need to be done, what my God has called me to do. You see, God's vision is always to lift us to a higher level of living. A higher level where we can properly interpret and interact with his will. Because that's where the good stuff is, right? That's where change happens. Life is better on a higher level. Our experience is fuller on a higher level. We are limited by the level we choose to live on. The experience we have of God's blessing, the experience we have of his purpose and mission in our life is limited by the level we choose to live on. That's why God wants to elevate our level. He wants to take us to a higher place, a higher calling. Why? Why does he want to elevate the way you see your time? Why does he want to change the way you see your finances, your passions, your purposes, your possessions? Because life and the experiences he has for us are always better on a higher level. I am a Texas forever kid, born and raised in Dallas. And there is something beautiful about a painted Texas sunrise or sunset. But every summer, we take our students to Colorado. Man, that's a whole nother level of pretty. We get down where our camp is, which is this awesome little carved out valley in the middle of the Rocky Mountains. and it's just pretty. It's a higher elevation than Dallas. The view changes. What we experience changes. However, even above that, our students get the chance to go on a hike. They go on a hike. It's not easy. It's difficult. It's challenging. It gets harder to breathe and harder to know what's going on. And they get to that top. And what they see is different. What they experience is different. We have some beautiful things here. You get a little higher and then there's some beautiful things there. But then you get to the top. You get to see above where most people see. You live life at a different level than most people. It's not better or worse. It's what you're called to. If we want to fully experience what God has for us, we have to live life on a different level. We have to allow Him to elevate the way we see what He's given us. This is what He's trying to teach us. So it makes us ask the question, what level am I experiencing life from? How have I limited my experience with Jesus? Am I hungry for what Jesus is hungry for? Do my passions match His? Do my pursuits match His? Is my hunger matching His? Am I living life on the level He's leading me to? Jesus continues with His disciples, helping them try to understand they've got to raise the level they're living from. And He goes on to say this, "Do you not say, there are yet 4 months and then comes the harvest? Look." I love that. If you have your Bible, circle the word look. If you're taking notes, write down the word look. Anytime Jesus tells you to look, look. He says, look. I tell you, lift your eyes and see the harvest. See, what He's saying is, when you talk about blessings, when you talk about harvest, when you talk about victories, you think you've got to do the work and then wait. You think that you've got to plant it and then 4 months later, you'll reap it. He says, I'm telling you to look up. I'm telling you to look up where you are right now. You see, here's what I noticed. When it comes to us pushing the mission forward, it's not about opportunities, it's obedience. It's obedience, not opportunities. I want you to think about this. This kind of made me a little mad this week at myself. How many times have we prayed for an opportunity? See, when our men came to the event, every one of them was going to have an opportunity to play a role. They didn't have to ask for it. They didn't have to request it. It was there. Whether they wanted it or not, they were going to have an opportunity. How many times have we woken up saying, God, give me an opportunity to show someone love today? God, give me an opportunity to tell someone about you today. Give me an opportunity to bless someone today. Do you know how crazy that sounds? It's like waking up and praying, God, give my kids an opportunity to be obedient today. Are they ever short of that opportunity? No one prays that. No one wakes up and says, God, let my kids have an opportunity to be good. No, we wake up and say, God, let my kids make good decisions. Help my kids be obedient. The opportunity is never lacking. It's not optional. It's there. It surrounds us. The choice is obedience. He says, you want an opportunity? Just open your eyes. Just look around you. You ever notice that God doesn't have to go find what you need? When you go to Him in need of something, He doesn't have to go find it. When our kids ask us for something, I got to go buy it, find it, order it, make it, lie, say it doesn't exist. I got to do something. We have a strong no battery replacement policy in our house. Parents with young kids, adopt it, okay? They don't even know what batteries are, all right? It's not making sounds. Praise Jesus. It is early Christmas. Can you fix it? Nope. It's a silent toy. Husbands, if your wife has ever been pregnant, you understand. One day it's coming. In 2 a.m., some crazy craving is going to come up. And they're going to want some weird combination of Bluebell ice cream, Doritos, pickles, and peanut butter. And that's not speaking from experience. And you're not going to have it. So what do? You put on a fake smile, you jump in the car, and you drive down to Walmart. And you're checking out Walmart at 2 in the morning with ice cream, peanut butter, Doritos, and pickles, and they're smelling for something. So I promise, my wife's pregnant. Nothing wrong going on here. Because you don't have it. Think about that. When we need something from God, He doesn't have to go find it. He doesn't have to go create it. Oh, we just have to look up. We just have to look up and see what is already around us. We have to look up from that sin that entangles us and see His saving grace. We just have to look up from that burden that binds us and see the freedom before us. We just have to look up from that island of isolation and see the community that's already surrounding us, waiting for us to get involved in. All you have to do is change your orientation to let God take you to the destination He desires for you. You just have to look up. Hebrews chapter 12, the author says, "Therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us, one, lay aside every weight and sin which entangles us so closely, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us." Number two, looking to Jesus. There is always something we need to look up from, and there's always something we need to look up to. What burden have you buried your head in today that is causing you to be blind to the opportunities around you, to the provision around you, to the answers around you? It's about obedience. He says, you need an opportunity? It's there. You need community? It's there. You need mercy? It's there. I'm already off the cross, he says. He says, fool, I'm not up there anymore. Don't wait for me to die. I've already died and I've already come back. It's done. Just accept it. Just be obedient to my call to accept the purpose I've created you for. Accept the mercy I've made for you. It's done. It's not about waiting for the opportunity. It's about obeying the opportunity that surrounds you. Look up. Maybe we just need to look up. Maybe we just need to see things, to experience things from another level. How many of us are sitting, heads buried, waiting for an opportunity that God's already surrounded us with? Waiting for a deliverance that God's already delivered. Look up. The disciples are following Jesus with a chance to do something. He says, look up. You imagine the image. The disciples there surrounded by with Jesus and the woman. Still trying to figure out who fed him. Still trying to figure out where he got food from. And he says, you want an opportunity to know what I know? To feel what I feel? Look up. You imagine the disciples' heads raised and eyes open, their vision widened, and they see the people. They see an entire town that had disowned a woman coming down to hear the message she shared. Which leads us to our last thing. You see, what I love about this woman is that once she heard the message, she went on a mission. Why? Because the message is motivating. The message of what Jesus does, what he has done, what he will do is motivating in our life. You're waiting for healing? Be motivated by the healing we've seen. You're waiting for purpose? Be motivated by those who have found purpose. It's not on its way, it's here. It may not look, see, or sound like what you want, but it is here. God is not limited to our expectations, but our experiences are limited to the level we choose to live on. Going further and deeper with him. And I thought about that this week. The disciples wanted to know Jesus more. They wanted to get deeper with the Son of God. Depth is always measured by obedience, not knowledge. He says, more blessed is he who hears my word and does it. See, we can know the message without doing the mission. The woman heard the message of Jesus. She could have stayed at the well. But no, she went back home to a home that had kicked her out, had abandoned her, to a failed life in her eyes. She went back. Why? Because the message she heard was motivating. And she wanted others to experience it. We closed our big event, and we always do, with the cross. But this year we want to do something a little different. Instead of our men carrying the cross, we wanted them on the cross. We wanted them to understand that in order for other people to experience what they've experienced, sacrifice is necessary. So the men would get on this cross, barefoot on this little peg, which we thought like 2 minutes would be tops. You had men up there trembling, holding on for dear life. Because while they were up there, their men, their friends, their community, their people were running up the top of a tower to get a little 2 ounce glass of water full, running it back down and then filling it up in a chalice so that someone else could go. Everyone waiting their turn. And then the first team got done. We're watching the men. Then all of a sudden we hear, I looked up and thought, what the heck is he doing? We didn't say to ring the bell. We put this bell out there to signal the start of everything. Not the completion, not the finish, not the victory. But I tell you, there was something. When they heard that bell, it's like eyes opened. It's like men started running faster. They started standing longer. Exhausted yet pursuing, they kept going. Because that message of victory, that sound of victory was so sweet, it motivated them to keep moving. It motivated them to keep going, no matter what was in front of them. That's what I loved about this woman. She heard the message and then she went on a mission. Immediately understanding that there was something more. Knowing that the people needed to hear it. Knowing that they needed to experience it. She heard the message. She went on a mission. And it changed everyone's moment. It changed the harvest that day. It was no longer about food. It was about souls. It was about people who were stuck in their struggle, hearing the sound of victory. What she knew, what the disciples I don't feel had learned yet, was that just because she accepted the message doesn't mean the mission was over. It was just her role that changed. Instead of staying to be a consumer of the message, she went on a mission. She took what she had heard, it motivated her, and she got moving. She laid aside the sin and the weight that entangled her so that she could run her race with endurance. The endurance given to her by the message of Jesus Christ, His mercy, His love, His grace and forgiveness. If we know and believe in what we've experienced, who are we to keep it to ourselves? But I just need the opportunity. Look up. She didn't go looking for the easy. She looked for the close. Who's the closest person I can help? After that first team rang that bell, everybody else wanted their chance to ring it. Until 15 teams had made that sound, waiting on that one last team to get done. And the beauty is, some teams knew they weren't done. They did their scripture, they let us say our spiel, and then they got back on their cross because some of them wanted their turn. They were motivated by what their brothers had done for them, and even though the challenge was over, their moment wasn't over, and they got back on the cross. Don't tell me they weren't on that cross for a reason. They knew there was somebody. They knew there was a harvest they were trying to change. Parents, just because you hit a moment of success doesn't mean the mission's over. Because what you do today will set the harvest for your children tomorrow. The priorities you set today. Husbands, fathers with daughters, you want them to pick a loving husband? Show them. Show them what that looks like. Show them what it looks like to date and love their mom. You want them to love their spouse, dads? You want your son to love your mom, your wife? My kids know I love her more than I love them. They'll tell you. Why? Because she was here first. And she'll be there long after. Ages 6 and 4, and they know who I love most. You want to tell me my son's not going to love his wife more than anything? Where did I learn it from? My dad. In the midst of a difficult moment, my dad looked at me and said, "You know one thing, I love her more than you. And I will protect her over you." That stuck with me. What you do today creates the harvest for tomorrow. Oh, church. Oh, that we would look up. Oh, that we would look up from our busyness, from our distractions, from our fear, from our confusion. Oh, that we would look up. Oh, that we would stop consuming and start carrying the mission forward. Because I assure you, if we did, that sound, it's never going to stop. That sound's going to ring through your neighborhood. It's going to ring through your homes. It's going to ring through your finances. It's going to keep ringing 5 generations from now. Because you changed the course of your family. Because your actions created a harvest that generations would continue to reap. Because you said, it's time to live on the level God's leading me to. Oh, that we would look up. Say, "Luke, I can't." You can. How do I know? Because what you need to look up is already in front of you. Just open your eyes and see it. You don't have to wait for it. That faith is there. You don't have to wait for it. That community is there. Just look up. Look up and see. Look up and see what the Lord has put before you. Look up. Let the message motivate you. Start running. running, that bell won't stop ringing. It never will. But we've got to stop by looking up and starting to live life from the level God's led us to. Father, we love you. We thank you for your love and grace. We thank you for stories like these. Women and men, like that woman in Samaria, who showed us what it meant to run. With all our odds stacked against us, she showed us what it meant to run. What motivation could do, what his message could bring. We've got to stop being focused and distracted by the physical and look to the spiritual to understand what you are trying to show us. I will take spiritual healing. Take spiritual success over what the world views as physical success any day. Because I want to live on that level. I want to live and I want to look and I want to see and experience the fullness of what you've laid out for me. Whatever is in your way this morning, I pray you would lay it aside. And that you would look up from whatever doubt, whatever burden, whatever distraction you have. That you would look up and see the harvest before you. See the opportunity for obedience before you. Look up and see